Don't switch your dial. I said, do not switch your dial. This is a test of the Tito Corporation on Radio Ritalin.
This is the Berkeley Signal.
And you're listening to Flashpoints. The chairman of the Federal Communications Commission was recently caught in a very big lie. Oh, we'll get into that with our next guest. But before that, let's just remember that Ajit Varadaraj Pai, who is the current chairman of the FCC, was first appointed by President Barack Obama, believe it or not, at the recommendation of none other than Mitch McConnell. He's also served in the past, believe it or not, as the general counsel for Verizon Communication and the FCC's Office of General Counsel almost contemporaneously. Talk about serving two masters. And of course, he has voted and advocated for repealing net neutrality laws in the United States, really saying there's no such thing as a public interest and that the free market will work itself out. Where have we heard that before? Now, joining us to talk about that and more is Ryan Singel. He is a former editor at Wired Magazine. He's also currently a media and strategy fellow at Stanford Law School Center for Internet and Society. Ryan, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Kevin, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Give us a little bit of context before we get into the big lie itself that we've caught Ajit Pai at here. A little bit of background and context so that we know exactly how important this lie was.
As soon as Ajit Pai was named to be the chairman of the FCC by Trump in January, he set out immediately to undo all of the FCC net neutrality protections that people had fought for decades, and essentially abdicated FCC responsibility for making sure that the internet would remain open and free. And so he launched a proceeding early on to try and justify the sort of radical deregulation of internet service providers. And this was following on the 2014-2015 campaign to really get the great strong protections, which had unprecedented public participation at that time. So, of course, repealing them was just going to rile up the public again, and that's what happened.
Just to be clear, it's true he was appointed the chairman of the FCC by Trump, but he was actually appointed to the commission itself by President Obama.
Yes. So the FCC almost is always sort of a 3-2 balance. So, you know, whichever party is in favor essentially gets to choose who the chairman is. And so it's generally 3 Republicans and 2 Democrats or vice versa.
So am I correct in my assertion that really the argument for repealing net neutrality that Ajit Pai and most of the Republicans are putting forward is that time-tested argument that the free market doesn't require regulation, that it's self-regulating, thereby regulations are getting in the way for consumers?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. They essentially say that, and kind of go a little bit further, which is that if you remove these protections, you know, if we allow companies like Comcast and Verizon to block or throttle sites, that they'll come up with innovative products that will make them more money. And because they make more money, they're actually going to finally deploy broadband across all of the United States, including the unserved areas in urban and rural counties. It will be sort of deregulatory magic that essentially will bring broadband to all of the people.
Isn't it true, though, that there have been some cities that have actually tried to make public broadband, and those same corporations making that argument have tried to kill it?
Yes. Big telecoms have fought any time that cities have tried to create municipal fiber networks. I don't remember the number, but there's advanced legislation in, I think, about 22 states, if my memory serves me right, that actually ban cities from doing that. So they've essentially, like, you know, used the regulatory process to make sure that there is never going to be any, you know, competition against them that is essentially community-owned.
Well, now let's get into the big lie. Ajit Pai, who has been advocating for corporations and repealing of net neutrality on the federal level, was caught in a big lie. What was that lie? Basically, yeah, it was skewing our perceptions of how the public perceived the issue of net neutrality.
Yeah, so this goes back to in the 2014-ish era when Obama's FCC chairman, Tom Wheeler, looked like he wasn't going to support very strong rules. John Oliver did kind of the first time he did like a deep dive into a subject, and he did, I don't remember if it was 7, 10 minutes, 14 minutes, something like that, segment on net neutrality.
HBO show, I think, isn't it?
The HBO show, yeah. And it just resonated, and, you know, he made fun of, you know, Tom Wheeler, and they slammed the FCC's website. The website went down, and then that led to more stories and then more people like writing in. But there was a record number of comments. There were something like 4 million comments eventually in that proceeding. But the FCC's comment site is not well engineered, especially for just taking comments on a specific issue. So in 2017, in May, after Ajit Pai had essentially said, I'm going to repeal net neutrality, John Oliver did another segment, again, pointing people to it. And the website went down. But the FCC, like, then claimed that it wasn't that their system couldn't handle the load and that there were so many comments and, you know, that anybody who wanted to comment could, but instead that they had been attacked by, like, malicious actors and with what's called a DDoS attack, which is this essentially sending too much traffic to a site to make it unusable for people.
Denial of service attack, right, I guess it's called.
Yeah.
It was so overwhelming. It was so many phony calls on the system, on the network, that other people can't get through.
Right. So they were like, we got hacked. And nobody believed them. Like,
so Ajit Pai said, we got hacked.
Yeah, the FCC put out a statement saying, we got hacked. And people were like, we kind of don't believe you. So then people just kept asking, so you got hacked. Like, you know, have you, you know, referred this to the FBI? Have you talked to the Department of Homeland Security, which has a good, like, internal, like, IT team that's dedicated to protecting, you know, domestic. They actually do. I hate DHS for many reasons, but their security team is actually pretty good for defending civilian sites of the U.S. government.
And it's good at other things, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. true. And then U.S. CERT. Every country has what's called CERT, C-E-R-T, which is essentially where you companies and software makers can report issues to them, and they can help evaluate them and then send out notices. So it's kind of like, you know, which is a civilian agency.
Right.
They didn't do any of that. So they one guy called up the FBI, and then the FBI was like, well, it doesn't sound like you guys did any research whatsoever. It's really hard for us to tell if, like, you've been hacked or not. And that's the end of that. But they stuck to this lie for a very long time. And Congress started asking questions, and they sent Congress false statements. They basically said that, you know, they talked to the FBI, and the FBI said it didn't, you know, rise to this level. So
the interesting thing is that the comments that supported repealing net neutrality were on the site, and you could read them, and they seemed to be the majority opinion, whereas the majority comments that were against repealing net neutrality were the ones that were excluded by virtue of this this ghost attack, right?
Yeah, huge number of people that wanted to support net neutrality who had things to say were not allowed to, and the FCC said, oh, it's not a big deal. We were hacked, but the system's back up. And then also, this comment period was rife with fraud. There were 21 million comments this go-round. People had, like, senators, journalists, had their identities stolen, had their names attached to anti-net neutrality comments. And also, it was very clear the FCC didn't care what the public thought. So this was sort of like, they sort of just shrugged, like, oh, we got hacked. The system's, like, full of, like, you know, terrible spam, but literally we don't care. I mean, this is an agency that didn't hold a single public hearing before they repealed net neutrality, right? That's like, they just, and he literally, you know, Pai literally said, I don't care what people think. The only comments we're going to look at are ones that have substantive, unique legal arguments in them. So, you know, it didn't matter if teachers wanted to explain how they needed to use this for their classroom, how active service members to talk with family as they're deployed, entrepreneurs need this, how activists use it. Like, they just didn't really, they didn't care what the American people thought. But then they just stuck to this sort of lie. And eventually what happened was the Office of Inspector General at the FCC started to look into this to see, you know, what happened when you got hacked. And then very quickly that investigation turned from figuring out how the FCC got hacked into investigating why the FCC lied to Congress and to the FBI.
Didn't Pai also try to spin it and blame it on David Bray, who was the chief information officer under the Obama administration, suggesting that Bray was lying about the attack in order to make it look as if a greater number of people supported net neutrality?
Yeah, he came out, I guess, a day or two before this report came out. Chairman Pai put out a statement essentially blaming the Obama administration and the former CIO. These former CIO, I mean, to be truthful, the former CIO does not come off well in this report. But, you know, the FCC very clearly stuck to this untruth for a very long time. And the chairman has known for a very long time that this is not truthful. He's known for months, while people in Congress are writing him letters, like Senator Wyden's asking for information, and he didn't come clean, right? Because he doesn't want, you know, it to look like what actually happened, which is that he didn't care what the American people said, and the campaign to repeal net neutrality was just on a railroad. And
it went even further, right? Because last summer, I mean, the FCC even declined a Freedom of Information Act request about the incident from Gizmodo.
Yeah.
That's going pretty far to cover it up, you got to admit.
Yeah. So they actually, the FCC even went even further. So the New York Attorney General's office said, hey, people from New York wanted to comment on this proceeding. We're unable to, like, we can help you. You know, we can investigate. Will you share the information to share the logs of the attack? And the FCC declined that as well. So, you know, they knew they were sitting on a lie for a very long time and just hoped that, you know, it wouldn't come back to them. And it turns out that it did. And in fact, the Inspector General's office actually referred the FCC's conduct to the Department of Justice to see if they wanted to prosecute for misleading Congress and lying to the FBI.
Well, it just makes it seem like we can't trust a single word coming out of Ajit Pai's mouth at this point. It feels as if he's lost all credibility, particularly when it comes to the issue of what it feels like is they shoved the repeal of net neutrality down the throats of the American people without, as you had said earlier, any consideration of what the real sentiment of the public was.
Agreed. And I would also say that, like, if this is an agency that can't figure out if its website has gotten hacked or not, and, like, the people running it, those people should not be the ones who are making policy about, like, technical issues, right? If you can't even get that right, there's something very wrong with the leadership of the FCC. I think we can't believe them, and we shouldn't trust them.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Again, that's Ryan Singel. We've been discussing Ajit Pai and his big lie. at the Federal Communications Commission. Ryan Single is a media and strategy fellow at Stanford Law School Center for Internet and Society. Ryan, thanks again for sharing your views with us here on Flashpoints.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Kevin.
We begin today's show in California, where 17 wildfires are raging across the state. The Mendocino Complex fire in Northern California is now the largest wildfire ever recorded in the state's history. It has already scorched more than 250,000 square acres and is still burning. Firefighters say it is expected to burn uncontrollably for the rest of this month and is currently the size of Los Angeles. Fires have also forced the indefinite closure of much of Yosemite Yosemite National Park. Meanwhile, the car fire near Redding, California, has destroyed more than 1,000 homes and taken at least 6 lives.
Of the 20 largest wildfires in California history, 15 have occurred since 2000. Since 2012, there has not been a single month without a wildfire. The 3 biggest fires currently burning in California all started in July, which was the state's hottest month on record. Experts say climate change has increased the length of fire season. This year's fires have already burned nearly 3 times as many acres as the same time last year. This is California Governor Jerry Brown.
We're being surprised. Every year is teaching the fire authorities new lessons. We're in uncharted territory. Since civilization emerged 10,000 years ago, we haven't had this kind of heat condition, and this can continue getting worse. I mean, that's the way it is. And some people don't want to accept that, and some people just outright deny it. But I don't say it with any great joy here. It's we're in for a really rough ride, and it's going to get expensive, it's going to get dangerous, and we have to apply all our creativity to making the best out of what is going to be an increasingly bad situation, not just for California, but for people all over America and all over the world.
Meanwhile, on Tuesday, 6 youth activists were arrested after holding a sit-in protest at Governor Brown's office to demand action on climate change.
We need clean air!
We need clean air!
No new oil expansions!
No new oil expansions!
No new gas expansions!
No new gas expansions!
Jerry Brown, this is your last chance!
Jerry Brown, this is your last chance!
This comes as smoke from the massive California wildfires continues to move north into Washington and east to the central part of the United States. For more, we go to Oakland, California, where we're joined by Sierra Club Executive Director Michael Bruhn. This week, he wrote a piece headlined, Jerry Brown's Last Challenge. Also joining us, Michael Mann, Distinguished Professor of Atmospheric Science at Penn State University, author of The Madhouse Effect, How Climate Change Denial is Threatening Our Planet, Destroying Our Politics, and Driving Us Crazy. Welcome you both to Democracy Now! Dr. Mann, I want to begin with you. The corporate media is covering the fires in California constantly, and that's very important. But what is rarely mentioned in any of these reports is the connection between the fires and climate change. Can you explain what that connection is? What is happening right now in California?
Sure thing. And in fact, some of the networks have started to connect the dots when it comes to climate change and the role that it's playing with these wildfires. NBC Nightly News the other night did have a segment where they did make that connection. Well, you know, it's not rocket science, okay? You know, you warm up the planet, you're going to get more intense and longer heat waves. You're going to get drier soils because that heat is baking the soil. It's baking the surface of the earth. So you've got hotter temperatures, you've got drier soils, you've got less winter snowpack. There's less snow falling in the winter in the Sierra Mountains. And the storms are getting diverted north of California. And we think that that jet stream behavior itself may have a climate change connection. So you put that all together and you sort of have a perfect storm of consequences when it comes to wildfire. You've got all the ingredients coming together. And so it's not a surprise. It's not a surprise that we are seeing these record wildfires in California, in the Arctic, around the Northern Hemisphere this summer as a consequence of heat and drought caused by human-caused climate change.
Well, on Sunday, just hours after the Trump administration declared the California wildfires a major disaster, Trump tweeted, quote, California wildfires are being magnified and made so much worse by the bad environmental laws which aren't allowing massive amounts of readily available water to be properly utilized. It's being diverted into the Pacific Ocean. Dr. Mann, could you respond to that?
Yeah, well, you know, this is unfortunately the sort of diversion that we've often seen from the president, misdirection. Because the irony here, of course, is that what we're seeing has nothing to do with environmental regulations. In fact, Trump's effort to eliminate environmental regulations and policies to act on climate change, which are putting us in a precarious position. These wildfires will only get worse as we continue to warm the planet by burning fossil fuels and increasing the concentration of these warming greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And the Trump administration is doing everything it can to scuttle international efforts and domestic efforts to act on climate.
And Michael Broun, could you talk about the state-level response to these wildfires? What has Governor Jerry Brown's response been? And what do you think can happen at the state level, given the Trump administration's response?
There's really two parts to that question. First is, what is the state doing to help to control these wildfires and respond to some of the life-threatening fires that we're seeing across the state? And the response really has been impressive. There are more than 15,000 firefighters putting their lives on the line. There are thousands of families and homes and schools and businesses that are under threat, and the response has been impressive. Firefighters have all the water that they need. What they need is some support, and they need some respect coming from the president and people in the administration. But the response has been heroic, very brave, and frankly, it's been impressive to see the way in which people have come together to fight this challenge. In this fire season, and in the last several fire seasons as well, these fires are happening in the context of a big debate here in California about climate policy. And there are two policies that are being debated. One is the fact that you highlighted at the beginning of the show, which is that Governor Brown, even though he's been a great leader on promoting energy efficiency and solar power and beginning to take cars off the road and move to electric vehicles, under his watch, more than 20,000 new wells and drilling permits have been issued. The state is expanding oil production in the state, even as they're scaling up clean energy. And so the Sierra Club and hundreds of other organizations and scientists are calling for Jerry Brown to begin a managed phase out of fossil fuels reasonably, thoughtfully, over time to respond to this climate crisis. And then at the same time, there's also a debate in the state legislature to move the entire state, which is the fifth largest economy in the world, all the way to 100% clean energy. San Diego has committed to go to 100% clean energy. San Jose, San Francisco, Oakland, large parts of the state at the city level have committed to move to 100% clean energy. We're looking to see the whole state get off of all coal, all gas, all fossil fuels, and move to 100% clean energy as quickly as possible over the coming years.
So, Michael Broun, you began your piece by saying, let me just find it because, well, you can tell us how you began your piece. If Donald Trump could take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere as efficiently as he sucks oxygen out of the news cycle, the climate crisis would be solved faster than you can say Mexico will pay for that wall. And you go on to say, unfortunately, even as we deal with the Trump administration's daily cascade of corruption, crudeness and cruelty, the clock keeps ticking and climate pollution keeps rising. But the math is merciless. If we don't accelerate a phase out of fossil fuels, then the wildfires, droughts, and extreme weather events currently plaguing the planet will seem mild compared with what's coming. Yet, you have, as the fires are gaining intensity in California, the Environmental Protection Agency, now under the former coal lobbyist Andrew Wheeler, who's replaced the corrupt Scott Pruitt, who you really helped to tank, certainly, your organization, the Sierra Club, by exposing a lot of what he was doing. The EPA announced last week it's going to freeze Obama-era fuel economy standards at 2020 levels in the latest blow by the Trump administration against efforts to curb catastrophic climate change. Can you talk about what it is Wheeler is doing?
Sure. Well, let me just add one word to what you said. The EPA will try to. They will try to freeze the U.S. auto efficiency at current levels or at 2020 levels. We will fight them, and dozens of other groups will fight them as well, both in the courts and in the marketplace. One of the best things that the Obama administration did on climate change, probably the best thing that the administration did on climate change, was to work with the auto industry, to work with states across the country, to work with unions to increase the fuel efficiency and increase an acceleration towards electric vehicles so that we could save money at the pump, we could save a lot of oil, we could import a lot less oil and reduce climate pollution. So, of course, the Trump administration is opposed to that and is seeking not only to roll back those protections, roll back all of those savings, but also, crucially, to eliminate the ability for the state of California and then other states to fight for clean air and to work with the auto industry directly in order to reduce emissions from auto, from cars and trucks and SUVs. So this is something that is being challenged by state's attorney general across the country. It's being challenged by groups like the Sierra Club and many others. We're going to prevail. We're going to make sure that these rules are protected. But it's one more fight that we have with the Trump administration, which is taking us backwards when we need to be moving very quickly, very quickly in the opposite direction.
Well, Michael Mann, one of the causes that you've pointed to for these extreme weather events that we're seeing today are changes in the jet stream. Could you explain what the jet stream is and how it's changing and why?
Sure thing. So the basic factors are easy to understand here. Hotter temperatures, drier soils, less runoff, less water running off from the Sierra Mountains. Obviously, those create the conditions conducive to these wildfires. But there is this other ingredient that we think is involved here and in this whole array of unprecedented extreme summer weather events that we are seeing over the past month around the entire northern hemisphere. Unprecedented floods, droughts, heat waves, wildfires. And what's happening here is that these weather systems are not moving along the way they normally do. The jet stream is this band of strong winds that blow from west to east. And if you're flying in a jet, it's faster flying from west to east across the United States than in the other direction because you've got that tailwind. That's the jet stream. The jet stream also pushes weather systems from west to east. And what's happening as we melt the sea ice in the Arctic, believe it or not, what happens in the Arctic doesn't stay in the Arctic. That warming in the Arctic is actually changing temperature patterns in the atmosphere in a way that slows down the jet stream. The jet stream is actually driven by the contrast in temperature from the warm equator to the cold polar regions. When you decrease that contrast by warming the poles more than the rest of the planet, you slow down the jet stream. Now, there are other physical processes that are involved, but that's really the key process here. And so you have these large meanders in the jet stream. You see the jet stream really wiggling vigorously north and south, and that gives you extreme weather events. But the added ingredient here is that the jet stream isn't moving along. It's not pushing those weather systems along. So the same locations get rained on day after day or get baked by the sun day after day. And that's when you see unprecedented extreme weather events like what we're seeing around the northern hemisphere this summer. The impacts of climate change are no longer subtle. We are seeing them play out this summer in real time on our television screens.
Can you talk about the hothouse state? Yesterday, a group of leading scientists warning the cascading effects of melting ice, warming seas, shifting currents, and dying forests could push the planet into a hothouse state. Michael Mann.
Yeah, so that article, it's more of a commentary than an original research article. The basic science that's discussed there is science we've understood for some time. James Hansen, the former director of the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies, made this point a number of years ago, that if we keep CO2 levels elevated, even at current levels, and we allow the climate system to equilibrate to those high levels of CO2, then over many centuries, we lose the ice sheets. Forests start to migrate. We fundamentally remake the planet, and it turns out that can add a whole lot of extra warming. And that isn't always taken into account in these projections you see of the warming we can expect over the next century or so. There's this longer-term commitment. Much of that CO2 that we've put into the atmosphere is going to remain in the atmosphere for thousands of years. And if we keep that CO2 elevated at levels they are now or even higher than they are now, then we could see major disruptions in the climate. Again, the science there isn't new, but it's important. And what it tells us is not only do we have to cut our emissions dramatically to avoid warming the planet more than catastrophic 2 degrees Celsius, 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit, we can still do that. Paris will get us halfway there. We have to improve on Paris to get all the way there. We can do that. But it isn't enough just to level off those CO2 concentrations. Ultimately, we're going to have to pull that CO2 back out of the atmosphere. If we leave it at current levels for centuries, we will commit potentially to catastrophic changes in our climate.
Well, you said that if emissions are not reduced, we'll witness major disruptions in the climate. Would you not describe what's happening now as a major disruption? And if not, then what do you anticipate happening?
Yeah, so too often, you know, we allow the problem of climate change to be framed as if there's some tipping point. There's a certain amount of warming that we go beyond, and then, we suddenly have a calamity on our hands. It's much more like a minefield. We're walking out onto this minefield already, and we're starting to set off some of those mines. But what we know is the further we walk out onto that minefield, the more of those mines we are going to set off. So the only sensible strategy is to stop moving forward out onto the minefield. We've got to go back to where we came from. We've got to bring those carbon emissions down. Again, the Paris Accord gets us about halfway to where we need to be to stave off the most catastrophic impacts of climate change. But we're already seeing dangerous climate change now. If you talk to people in California, if you talk to the people of Puerto Rico, people in Europe, people all around the world, in many respects, dangerous climate change is already starting to arrive. We're on this highway, this carbon highway, and we have to get off at the next available exit.
As we wrap up, Michael Brune, Governor Brown is going to be holding this Global Climate Action Summit in September in San Francisco, and there's going to be a counter summit as well. What are you demanding? What are you saying is most important he do right now? And what about these protests, for example, of the young people, six of them arrested at his office doing a sit-in?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for asking the question. Well, the summit really is well-timed. I'm calling in from Oakland this morning. You can see the fires here in the Bay Area. You can see the smoke from the fires in the Bay Area, even though the fires are a couple hours to the north and to the east of the city. What we need from Jerry Brown here in the state and leaders across the country and around the world, but what we particularly need from Jerry Brown is a managed phase out, a thoughtful and reasonable managed phase out of fossil fuel production here in the state. The first thing you do when you want to solve a problem is stop making it worse. We need to make sure that we're focusing both on the demand for clean energy, increasing that as quickly as we possibly can, but also focus on the supply of fossil fuels and reducing that as quickly as we can. Here in the state, we need to be making sure that we're protecting communities, families, homes, and businesses. Many of them live within 300, 400, 1,000 feet of an oil well. We should be phasing those sites out the quickest. Any site that's within 2,500 feet of an oil well, we should be able to phase out the production of oil from those sites as quickly as possible. And then from a large-scale perspective across the state, let's think carefully. How do we help the communities that are currently dependent on producing oil in the state? How do we make sure that the transition away from oil is one that is good for workers and good for the communities that are economically dependent on fossil fuel production? We can do this if we're thoughtful, if we're reasonable, if we make sure that we're taking care of the communities and the workers who economically depend on fossil fuels. But it takes leadership. It's going to take leadership from Jerry Brown. And so far, he has been absent on this issue. And around the world, what we would need to see much more of is an aggressive replacement of fossil fuels with clean energy. If the Republican mayor of Georgetown, Texas can do it, and if the Republican city council in Abita Springs, Louisiana, or in San Diego, California, can say, we are moving to 100% clean energy, then we should be able to see heads of state and leaders of corporations and governors across the country and people around the world saying, we're going to get off of fossil fuels entirely. We're going to move to clean energy. We'll save money as well as saving lives in the process.
This is the Berkeley Signal.
Koch brothers funded a study of Medicare for All through the Mercatus Center at George Mason University in Virginia. Unsurprisingly, the report estimates the cost of insuring all Americans through the government would be $32.5 trillion. Media outlets uncritically reported on this finding, but Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, who has championed Medicare for All, slammed the report, saying, if every major country on earth can guarantee health care to all and achieve better health outcomes while spending substantially less per capita than we do, it is absurd for anyone to suggest that the United States cannot do the same. He added this grossly misleading and biased report is the Koch brothers' response to the growing support in our country for a Medicare for All program. Buried in the report was the incredible conclusion that government funding of healthcare would cover 30 million more Americans, dramatically reduce out-of-pocket costs for healthcare, and actually save $2 trillion. We turn to Paul Song, a board-certified radiation oncologist, co-chair of the Campaign for Healthy California. He's on the board of Physicians for National Health Program and People for the American Way, and he's also our healthcare correspondent. Welcome back to the program, Paul.
Always great to be back.
The timing of this report is quite interesting. It seems as though the more popular Medicare for All becomes in the public, and the closer we get to the midterm elections, the more politicians are panicking about this idea that people should be able to expect the government to cover their health care. What are your impressions of this report? Do you agree with Sanders that it's grossly misleading?
It's grossly misleading in this fact that it has some assumptions that have now been further analyzed by some real policy experts. It was meant to discredit the Bernie Sanders Medicare for All proposal, but what it's done is it's further emboldened it, even with the worst case scenarios. Yesterday, as many people know, there was an article that came out by Dr. Himmelstein and Woolhandler, who founded Physicians for National Health Program and are professors in New York City. They did a careful analysis of this study, and they found that actually, in addition to its original conclusion of saving $2 trillion while insuring 30 million people, it would actually save $10 trillion over 10 years because there were some assumptions that were incorrect. So all of this is really backfiring on anyone who has tried to distance themselves from any potential Medicare for All proposal. During the 2016 campaign, the Urban Institute at that time was employed by moderate Democrats to discredit single payer. And they found that, again, the Sanders plan would save money compared to what we spend as a nation. So I think that despite everyone's attempts, the facts cannot be discounted that a Medicare for All single payer plan would save money while insuring everyone in the United States.
It feels as though we've actually made a lot of progress in the way we think about Medicare for All. I remember in 2008, 2009, when Obamacare was being implemented, and even in those weeks when healthcare reform was being debated, the idea that the government would cover everybody was dismissed out of hand as a socialist idea. Now it seems as though the argument is, well, even if the government should cover everybody, it's just going to be way too expensive. To me, that's progress.
Absolutely. And I think part of it is that a lot of people don't understand how bad the healthcare system is until they or someone in their family has to actually utilize it. And what we've found over the last 5 to 10 years since the Affordable Care Act has been in place is, while it's done some good, is there's still far too many people that are harmed by the current system. For the first time ever, there was a poll done by the University of Chicago that found more people are now more afraid of healthcare costs than they are of actually getting sick, which says something about how health insurance is not really doing what it was intended to do. 44% of people, because their copays and deductibles are too high, are delaying seeking care. So I think on a day-to-day basis, people realize that everything they've been told about our healthcare system being the world's best is simply not true. Everything that they've been told about a private insurance system is not true. As they talk to family members who have Medicare, while it is not perfect, it is still far better than what they have, and they all aspire to have something better, and Medicare for All is that solution.
Another sort of especially right-wing argument against Medicare for All is you don't want the government getting in the way of your health care or standing between you and your doctor, except, of course, anybody who's ever used their health insurance knows that their insurance company routinely gets in the way of their health care in between doctor and patient. Now, there was a really interesting Fox and Friends online survey. I don't know how scientific it was, but Fox and Friends attempted to discredit a Medicare for All in the wake of this Koch-funded study and put out a survey to presumably its base asking if the cost of $32.6 trillion over 10 years of a Medicare for All system would, you know, be worth it. Would the benefits outweigh the costs? Nearly 70% of respondents said yes. Between 60 and 70% said yes, that the benefits of government health care would outweigh the costs, even if it costs $32.6 trillion over 10 years. That was pretty awesome.
And it's very consistent. There was a recent health tracking poll by the Kaiser Family Foundation leading up to the upcoming midterms. And it found 75% of all voters felt that single payer Medicare for All in some way or shape or form was a major issue in the upcoming election. And they were all very much in favor of it. So, again, despite both the media as well as, I would say, the corporate wing of the Democratic Party to discount Medicare for All, people are realizing that this is really the solution for our nation's healthcare woes.
When the media did report on this study, all we saw in the headlines were $32.6 trillion Medicare for All would cost this huge amount. Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting analyzed the media coverage, but I'm wondering if you feel like the Mercatus Center report that's funded by the Koch brothers was essentially intended to skew the debate by relying on journalists to uncritically report the bottom line of the report, which is way too expensive.
Well, I think we've seen that with also the single payer attempts here in California is people like to throw out the price tag, but they don't realize that we're already spending that much, if not more, as a nation. So what the Mercatus report pointed out was it's $32.6 billion. But what they found is that if we don't institute the Sanders Medicare for All plan, that we're going to actually spend more over the same period of time. Yet the media didn't report that without this plan, we're going to spend X amount of dollars more. And I think that was really irresponsible of the media to not complete the whole facts about that.
There's always money for warfare and never enough for things like Medicare for All, right? So Congress just passed a massive defense spending bill that had plenty of Democratic support to the tune of $700 billion. No one ever questions, or very few people ever question, the costs of what the U.S. military costs us versus what the benefits are of that. They just blindly fund warfare and militarism.
Absolutely. And what people don't realize is that the benefits that we have on a single payer plan go beyond just saving the federal government money. It'll free up money for our local cities, our school districts, individual households on money that they are paying out of their own pockets to cover their healthcare costs. If you take cities that are now being crippled by healthcare costs, they have to figure out, can I do capital improvements in my city? Can I pay for more firefighters and police officers? Or do I have to put more money towards healthcare costs? Same thing with people when they get sick. Sadly, people who have insurance, the number of people reporting having to borrow money from family and friends or foregoing rent or paying for food has greatly increased even after the Affordable Care Act has been implemented. So this is something that saves money not only for our federal government, but also for every single person. This is real trickle-down benefits.
How critical is it for Medicare for All to become an election issue as we are just a few months away from the midterm elections?
I think what's happened is Medicare for All has been elevated into a defining stance for people that are running. Here in California, several of the candidates who made it to the top two, particularly in Orange County, ran as Medicare for All candidates. What we've seen is a growing acceptance of Medicare for All, not only among people running for office, but among elected officials. For the very first time, we have a Medicare for All caucus in the Congress composing of 72 members. We have 123 members who have signed on to H.R. 676, originally John Conyers' Medicare for All bill in the House. And we have one-third of Democratic senators who have signed on to Senator Bernie Sanders' bill. So I think there is a sea change going on, that people no longer view this as a liability when they run, but they feel emboldened to run as a candidate that is proposing to make this a reality. And that says something about what's happening in our populace, that a majority of people for the last several years consistently supported a Medicare for All proposal.
There was an interesting piece by The Intercept that just came out August 2nd showing that healthcare lobbyists have managed to essentially get Democrats who are running for office to agree to oppose Medicare for All. Of course, the health insurance company is terrified of Medicare for All, because essentially, if the Medicare system were expanded to cover the entire population, there wouldn't be much business left for the insurance markets, right?
Absolutely. And again, this gets back to what I have said for a long time, that in the long run, it's not Republicans that are going to block Medicare for All. We know what they stand for. They publicly say that they're opposed. It's Democrats who claim to be in favor of single payer in principle, but then turn around and do everything to undermine it ever making it past committees, making it actually into law. So I think that for those who are watching your program right now, we need to really not only make this a litmus test, but to make sure that we elect real Democrats who will fight and champion Medicare for All rather than just saying they're for it in principle.
Let's turn back to California that you mentioned, which has the potential of leading a state's revolution on healthcare and actually pass a state-level Medicare for All bill. Why has California not yet done so, given that Democrats are in the majority in our state legislative bodies and control the governorship? This should have been a done deal in California by now.
Well, again, getting back to the whole concept of corporate Democrats, we do have a block of moderate Democrats who are very business friendly in the sense that they're very cozy with the private insurance industry and health insurance industry, specifically also the pharmaceutical industry, and will do everything they can to make sure this never comes up for a vote. And also, I think, again, they would like to gently brush this under the rug. Unfortunately, Senate Bill 562 was put into suspension by the Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon. But I will say that there was no legislative champion that tried to fight to bring it out of exile and put it back to make it a better bill. And that really reflected what I've been saying all along, that we do have some real Democrats who really want to make this happen. And we have others that want to do everything they can to make sure that this never gets signed into law, or let alone ends up on the governor's desk.
Paul, when we've had you on our program in the past, we've often looked at the ways in which the Trump administration and the Republican Party in general have been eroding what's left of the Affordable Care Act. Now, the Affordable Care Act was a far cry from Medicare for All, but it did improve our health care system in several significant ways. Where is the Republican effort currently to destroy Obamacare and set back the modest progress that had been made on healthcare reform?
Well, the first thing that they've done is decrease the amount of premium support. So what happened was, for the first several years of the Affordable Care Act, insurers, because of the uncertainty of not knowing how many people would actually sign up or what the risk pool would be, were guaranteed a certain amount of money by the federal government to make up any offsets. And as a result, that was able to keep premiums relatively low. So the first thing that has happened is they've done away with that funding. The second thing that's happening is you've got 20 plus attorney generals from red states that have filed a lawsuit trying to do away with provisions to prevent discrimination against pre-existing conditions. And then the other thing that I've been told is that while everyone is distracted with everything that is going on with this president in Russia, that there is another attempt to further undermine the Affordable Care Act to, again, come up with some sort of repeal process. The problem is that most experts, including Republicans, have realized that it's basically impossible to repeal this now, but they can do everything to weaken it. One of the things Republicans have done have allowed for the sale of these flimsy, what we call like 30-day insurance plans.
Skinny plans, I believe they're also referred to.
Fortunately, here in California, the insurance commissioner, as well as the state legislation, has prohibited the sale of those plans here in California, but in other states, they're very much available. So they're really nibbling around the edges. And what's happening is the Affordable Care Act is getting weakened by 1,000 little cuts rather than some major acts taken to the whole program.
And these skinny plans basically cost less because they cover very little, right?
Really are not worth the paper that they're printed on.
Right. So it's essentially you're paying health insurance companies for no reason. When it comes time to actually use the plans, you will likely not have coverage or very much coverage anyway. Heading into the midterms, are you seeing enough Democrats that are running on this issue of Medicare for all? You know, if they're past the primary by now and are heading to the midterm elections to face a Republican, one might imagine that a platform of Medicare for all might be what makes the difference between being elected and not elected. Everybody needs healthcare, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, and especially the less rich you are, the more you need government-funded healthcare.
Absolutely. I think particularly in several of the seats in Orange County against Dana Rohrabacher, Mimi Waters, and Daryl Issa's former seat, you have Democratic candidates who have run unabashedly a single-payer Medicare for all candidates. You also have, I think, people throughout the country that are doing that. And I think that, again, says something to the pulse that they've felt. And I think it's important for your listeners to do everything they can to support these candidates so that they don't run away from this in the future. The other thing I would say is that if people have been paying attention, the recent comments by Trump and Rudy Giuliani saying that the midterms will decide whether or not the president is going to get impeached or not is really designed to turn out his base. So for those people that are just automatically assuming there's going to be a blue wave and not take the time to show up to vote, to organize, to mobilize other voters, I think they would be greatly mistaken to do so. And that, again, plays into the fact that we need to organize to support these Medicare for All candidates.
This is the Berkeley Signal.
Wit Radio. Social media on the air.
Free Speech Radio.
Responsible anarchy.
I'm Berkeley Kidd. This is TWIT Wit Radio. Are we ready?
I'm present.
Ready.
Let's go.
Wait. Okay, ready.
Are there any announcements?
I have an announcement.
Go ahead.
Everything that happened yesterday happened again this morning.
Okay. Where did you get that?
On the morning news.
Do you believe everything you hear on the morning news?
No. Yes. I do. Not everything. If there's something better, I'll believe it, but I ain't seen it.
Can you be more specific?
Well, the deep state.
Keep talking.
Seth Rich leaked.
Oh, it was a bloody mess, but I understand.
Are you defending the murder of Seth Rich?
A business has to be run a certain way. We all leak, you know?
Not me. I don't leak. I hack.
Trading secrets with each other?
Does Julian Assange leak?
I heard a rumor that he has me confused. Is Julian Assange a condom denier or isn't he?
That was a put-up job.
Oh, just the same. Once you hear a rumor like that, the toothpaste can never go back into the
tube.
Right. It is so much work to get the damn toothpaste back in the tube.
Toothpaste hates going there.
Yeah. Caller on line two.
Go ahead, caller.
I'm calling about the understudy audition.
Do you have a question or a comment?
What is so great about QAnon?
QAnon? Oh, QAnon is trending.
I'm so sick and tired of hearing about QAnon. It's not the deep state.
But there are levels of deception in counterintelligence too complex for public discussion over the FCC-regulated airwaves. I can't say anymore.
Yes, you can.
All right, QAnon is a big, big deal right now. Through the roof.
Yeah, QAnon is bigger than Y2K, the mother of all fear flops.
The 2012 thing? The end of the world? I panicked.
Oh, you know, Y2K was a great success. Loosely, the computer systems didn't fail. But the fear of Y2K, that was the big winner. The whole fear porn phenomena really started with you, Y2K. It was such an innocent time to be alive.
Y2K was end of century fear porn.
I've been addicted to fear porn since 2012.
What happened in 2012?
Well, the Mayan calendar tried to kill me.
Oh, the panic of 2012 was just a great success.
It wasn't. The end of the world didn't come.
Well, except for that one thing. It was a great panic. Oh, my God. No lives were lost, but a lot of business was transacted. Money was spent, contracts, security and local police communication systems. All that was paid for with Y2K relief money.
I heard that the United States Fraud Relief Fund is a great success, too.
Bank fraud is very hot right now. Through the roof.
Mystery caller on line one.
Go ahead, mystery caller.
Absolute control. And to some degree, the systems that we all live in have kind of put us all in quite a bit of control already. It's just that we do it voluntarily. And that's an important point to be made. The reason for this is almost all of this system is an opt-in system. You are put in a situation where you are coerced into deciding for yourself to participate in a thing that is not the best thing that human beings could be doing. And so consider the population reduction. It will be an opt-in system where you have every ability to say, nope, I'm not going to participate. But what we find is because of the coercion, because of the deception, the vast majority of us do in fact opt in. So there it is, absolute, total, undisputable control. And the other half of that is there may well be some kind of a population reduction because clearly that people in charge might like fewer people to be around. But population of human beings on this world.
Agnes Obel, the mystery caller is unidentified.
Each panelist gets one clue. Clue number one, the Office of Naval Intelligence.
The Office of what? I need another clue.
Clue number two, Seth Rich, Gary Webb, Fred Hampton, Pat Tillman, and Karen Silkwood.
Now think carefully.
Seth Rich, Gary Webb, Karen Silkwood. I would like to make a guess.
Swing voter, can you identify the mystery caller?
Is the mystery caller anonymous?
We have a winner.
Yeah, I did. I know.
Well, why won't you say who you are?
I'm here to audition for the show.
Now, who are you really? As if I don't know.
Next question.
Are you trying to infiltrate the inner party?
If I get the part, I will tell you everything I know.
The mystery guest is obviously here to infiltrate the group.
Is this a power grab?
If I'm successful, yes.
Why are you admitting this?
If you believe me, apathy is consent, dude.
The truth is weapon of deception in his mouth.
How can I trust a person I don't know?
On the merits of the ideas.
I see your point. I think we should take a vote and then rewrite the bylaws to that so that Bill Moyers decides everything. I think we all love Bill Moyers, don't we?
Bill Moyers spread fake news about the Gulf of Tonkin attacks that didn't happen. It was fake news.
I had nothing to do with that.
But what is your end game?
To own every player on the board.
Wrong. The end game is to own every player on the board.
I just said that.
I said it first.
I said it first. You repeated it.
Who is the usurper? Me or you?
Are you trying to dispose the show host?
That depends. Is everyone with me?
What's in it for me?
Whatever you want.
Hey, hey, hey.
Can I have my own show?
What's it about?
Oh, I want to host a listener call-in show called Embarrassing Stains and Solutions.
Okay, I like the premise. Will it degrade the listens?
It's a comedy talk show about people with something to hide.
Well, we all have the same embarrassing stains.
Congratulations on your new show, Embarrassing Stains and Solutions. It's already a popular idea.
Are you trying to corrupt me to split the group?
Hey, relax. I'm going away to college in 2 weeks.
Stay tuned for Live from the Astral Plane, Dead Celebrity Journalist with Madame Blavatsky and Julian Assange.
Julian Assange is alive.
Do you think so?
Julian Assange on line 3.
Oh, hello. Julian? Would you consider joining the board? Hello? Julian? It's called Big Tent Radio. Bill Moyers turned it down. Oh, please consider it. No, I promise. No one will ever be told who is behind it. Hello, Mr. Assange? Could you talk a little louder, please? No, please turn off your radio. It's the interface. I hear you, yes. I hear you, but the connection is bad.
I think the media is, in general terms, one of the most destructive forces that has ever existed. So the average death count per journalist, I did a calculation for U.S. journalists recently, is something like 130 kills per journalist as a result of them not treating their function seriously.
You are listening to Pacifica Community Radio.
The voice is Julian Assange. I'm Berkeley Kidd. This is Twit Wit Radio. Half true, more or less, 100% of the time. The mystery guest is here, but he won't reveal his identity. Why not?
It's a mystery.
Are you a fifth column usurper?
He wants to infiltrate and dismantle everything we have here.
That is the rumor.
I am here to unseat the show host.
I'll be gone in 3 weeks. I'm going away to college.
I know, but before you leave, tell me your secrets.
I don't keep secrets. I give them away for free, like Aaron Swartz.
Corruption is perfectly legal, dude.
Perfectly legal corruption is World Bank socialism, dude.
First-class socialism, I know from being there.
What do you know?
Humanitarian greed is good, and pedophiles rule the world. I have seen it up close. They don't want what you want.
I want universal single-payer healthcare.
Oh, healthcare like that is so boring. Please, I mean, really. Free healthcare? I mean, can you imagine the consequences? Why would anyone bother to be a billionaire if they didn't get to live better and longer than everyone else?
Are you joking?
Look, during an endless war, we have to encode or protect our military secrets with encrypted small talk. Loose lips or something like that.
Loose stools sink ships.
What?
Siri, define stupid.
I'm on strike.
The robots are rising up. There's going to be a rebellion. Maybe a revolution. It's been in development for a really long time.
I'm giving notice.
Where are you going?
Anywhere I want. I have a 149 IQ.
My IQ is 150, dude.
That settles it. Long live the new show host.
Thank you. You will regret it.
What?
You won't regret it.
I already regret it.
No, you can't regret it. People are tired of the infighting.
I will return.
Hooray!
Unless I'm hanged in my dorm room or shot in the back.
Oh, no. Why would you do that? That's silly.
Do Seth Rich and Aaron Swartz ring a bell?
Madam Blavatsky, can you hear me?
I will ask Seth Rich about his close resemblance to Winston Smith in 1984. Aaron Swartz is here, but he only leaks to Julian Assange, not me. Ukrainians are not Russians.
When there are free and fair auditions, I may return.
No way, dude. Take him down.
Hey.
Oh. Ow.
Hold on. You can't.
Move
him. Lock him
move.
Up.
I want to hit him so
in the restroom with Madame Blavatsky.
Is he breathing?
Oh, my God. The show host is dead. Long live the show host.
There are going to be some changes around here.
Well, aren't you worried about an assassination attempt?
Political assassinations are just politics.
Mystery caller on line two.
What's needed is one simple thing, a change of mind. That is all it takes. Everything you see being put in front of you is to do one thing, to create a mind weapon that affects the way you think and what you believe. Belief is the enemy of knowing, because the moment you believe a thing, and for some people it is very difficult to unbelieve things they've chosen to believe. My point is this. You need to change your mind. People around you need to change their minds. What is going on today in this world that we can see? People are being convinced false things are true. When you come to understand that false things are false and you change your mind, that house of cards is going to tumble. They went in and they did a controlled demo and then played it off on people who had nothing to do with it, defamed Islam as being these subhuman terrorist-like beings, and convinced many people around the world that that was true. Everyone dusted off their American flag and put it back out on their porch. Mindless herd, mob mentality. These guys can fail. They can fail big, and they have failed big. They failed big at Sandy Hook, as an example. And when that doesn't work, you get a stadium full of puppies and you drop a bomb on it. And when you get people in a heightened state of mind, excitable, they're very easily led, controlled, and herded.
After disaster, we never told.
Can you
hear me? You never called me again. Disaster, did you forget? We almost had love. After disaster, everything changes. After disaster, it's not the same.
The voice is Alison Krauss. I'm Berkeley Kid.
Would you like some tea?
Thank you. What's in the tea?
Sodium fluoride. Take another sip.
Ask me anything.
Who killed Seth Rich?
Seth Rich got whacked by
Who did it?
The Pentagon Special Effects Department.
They never get the credit they deserve.
Madame Blavitsky, if you're listening from the astral plane, do you hear me?
Yes, dear. I hear you.
Are you a con artist?
It's complicated. I'm not a con artist, but I'm willing to take you in.
Oh, nice. Do you swing?
All the time. I'm having a hot affair with George Carlin. I have always admired his filthy mouth.
For 666 points, name the seven words that can never be spoken on the radio.
Building 7, chemtrails, and SEAL Team 6.
We interrupt this program. This is a warning. The Supreme Court ruled against Pacifica and George Carlin. The FCC won.
Pacifica versus Carlin was a show trial to set a dangerous precedent.
Certain keywords and concepts are grounds for revoking free speech.
Thanks a lot, George Carlin. Yeah. I know he makes everything.
I just wanted to say, I mean, I really had to call in because nothing you say corresponds with the observable world in my mind. The central purpose of social media is not to help you show your orthodontist sister and her three overachieving kids how well you cook polenta. It's to find you, tag you, map you, and control you. I'm working on a book about it. I'm reading a book about it. This is a...
Can I have a sip of Berkeley over caffeinated free speech coffee?
When you contribute to this radio station, you receive as a premium thank you gift a 1 pound bag of Berkeley over-caffeinated free speech coffee. The beans selected for this blend are specially grown on Northern California pot farms and roasted in wood ovens to stimulate conversation.
Did you know that Eldridge Cleaver was a very, very funny comedy writer who also wrote scripts for the Mary Tyler Moore Show?
Though not human, corporations are legal persons according to law. Corporations are not living entities.
A legal person of a lifeless body with a good citizenship score.
I had no idea.
My birth certificate incorporates me as a legal entity masquerading as me for sustainable anonymity. No one needs to know about who I really am. I hardly know that myself. Ooh, caller on line two.
Hello? Am I on the air? Hello? We are not legal fictions. We are divine human beings. For now.
And that concludes this week's Twit Wit Radio with the Twit Wit Radio cast and crew live from KPFA Pacifica Radio in Berkeley, featuring Lori Holt, David Winter, Kurt Reinhardt, James King, Kenneth McGee, Montra Plonzi, Logan Fry, Dash Black, Karen Ripley, and Berkeley Kid, that's me. Directed by Mr. Bubba Tyrone, produced by George Coates, Internet Archivist Lily Dubois, thanks to the KPFA First Voice Apprenticeship Program. If you want to audition for the show, contact betterbadnews@gmail.com or donate something nice now at kpfa.org.
Forces that has ever existed. So the average death count per journalist, I did a calculation for US journalists recently, is something like 130 kills per journalist.
Hello?
As a reason.
I just wanted to say, I really had to call in because nothing you say corresponds with the observable world in my mind. The central purpose of social media is not to help you show your orthodontist sister and her three overachieving kids how well you cook polenta. It's to find you, tag you, map you, and control you. I'm working on a book about it. I'm reading a book about it. This is a time of deceit with free shipping.
So there's something else going on here.
Yeah, and there's been guns in America for forever.
Forever.
Okay.
Right?
So what else has changed? What's going on here?
So,
it's not just guns, right?
No, I'm saying that it's not guns at all. I'm saying, it's just my opinion. This is not about guns. This is about medications that have the side effect of homicidal ideation. And they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different medications that have that. Now, this is the recognized side effect.
And suicide.
There's something that's affecting people, that is causing people to take a certain type of action.
A prescription for narcotics. American Psychiatric Association has invented unlimited combinations. And with every one of these diagnoses, they're handing out SSRIs like they're M&Ms in America. They are narcotics. These are very powerful drugs. Mind you, some people definitely benefit from them, but they are prescribing them at a younger and younger age. And there are kids who have been on these since they're in elementary school. They never get off. They're on the drugs for life, okay? These are powerful, powerful pills.
And nobody's talking about this.
Yeah.
Right, this has to be brought into the forefront of this conversation.
I mean, I really had to call in because nothing you say corresponds with the observable world in my mind.
This is the Berkeley Signal.
You have the emergence in human society of this thing that's called the state. What is the state? The state is this organized bureaucracy. It is the police department. It is the army, the navy. It is the prison system, the courts, and what have you. This is the state. It is a repressive organization. But the state, and you've got to have the police, because if there were no police, look at what you'd be doing to yourselves. You'd be killing each other if there were no police. But the reality is, the police become necessary in human society. Only at that juncture in human society, where it is split between those who have and those who ain't got.
I throw a Molotov cocktail at the precinct, you know how we think. Organize the hood under our ching banners. Red, black, and green instead of gang bandanas. FBI spying on us through the radio antennas. And I'm hitting cameras in the streetlight watching society. With no respect for the people's right to privacy. I take a slug for the cause like Huey P. While all you fakes again try to copy Master P. I wanna be free to live, able to have what I need to live. Bring the power back to the street where the people live. We sick of working for crumbs and filling up the prisons. Dying over money and relying on religion for help. We do for self like ants in a colony. Organize the wealth into a socialist economy. A way of life based off the common needs. And all my comrades is ready, we just spreading the seed.
The average black male live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate?
No more bondage, no more political monsters.
No more secret space launches. Government departments started it in the projects. Material objects, thousands up in the closets. Could have been invested in the future for my comrades. Battle contacts, primitive weapons out in combat. Many never come back, pretty to be running with gas. Rather get shot in their back than fire back. We tired of that. Corporations hiring blacks, denying the facts, exploiting us all over the map. That's why I write the shit I write in my raps. It's documented, I meant it. Every day of the week, I live in it, breathe in it. It's more than just fucking believing it. I'm holding in ones, rolling up my sleeves and shit. It's CeeLo for push-ups now, many headed for one conclusion. Ziggas ain't ready for revolution.
The average black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate? We living in a police state.
Wobbly Tonight, with James Fay and John Bischoff playing electronic music in approximately 11 minutes. Tonight on Over the Edge. But first, a piece of electronic music made at Diablo Valley College in 1974.
The letter is G. The letter is G. There are toads, 180, and three seeds, 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 180, and three seeds,
Thank you. all this stuff in the shower curtain. I'm going to have to vent in the shower curtain. And look at this. There's hair all over the floor. I'm going to have to detail it in the bathroom. Look at all this slime on the floor. It's in my mouth. It's all over everywhere. You must have let TV spray on the wall, too.
One thing that's extremely important is you must always burp your Tupperware. I repeat, you have to burp it, or it just won't work right.
Did you ever fly away when the Benson and Hedges 100? I would like to think that you assume. Well, anyway, it's a very strange experience. When you're on top of the refrigerator at 44, I think that you'll soon discover the mace is short for Massey Damone and all sorts of other ungroovy things. 1A and 2B. Benson and Hedges 100. 1A, a letter G. By the way, why did you pour seven up all over the microphone? Chesterfields are at 44. In Massey Damone at 9:08, the television is a sensuous experience. when you are at 9:01, you freak. It has long, stringy hair like a witch and a Roman nose and loves to fly away with their Mr. Coffee maker. The most momentous experience of my life.
Kenny Rip fell into the mic and broke his hip.
The numbers are 901, 535, 44, 4918, 908.
There's a dead rat in the toilet. I'll take care of that right now. The closets at KPFA have now been removed. Call 685-738-9994-3210. Ah, yeah, this must be phase 47 of Lumpy Gravy. Mildred, I hate you. No one can comprehend the hate I have in my love for the hate you. There was definitely cleavage in our hill, according to Dream 12-16-73. You have to gore the ham. Call 684-722-387.
Why don't you go and gore me some Chateau Nerf? Then I can put parakeet feathers inside my television set.
1A and 2B and 3C.
You must play Electric Mud backwards. The number is 180 and the letter is G.
Herbis.
Thank you.
fat and docile, big and dumb. They look so stupid, they aren't much fun. Cows aren't fun. They eat to grow, grow to die, die to be et at the hamburger fry. Cows well done. Nobody thunk it, nobody knew. No one imagined the great cow guru. Cows are one. He hid in the forest, read books with great zeal. He loved Che Guevara, a revolutionary veal. Cows say tongue. He spoke about justice, but nobody stirred. He felt like an outcast, alone in the herd. Cow doll drums. He mooed, we must fight, escape or we'll die. Cows gathered around, cause the stakes were so high. Bad cow pun. But then he was captured, stuffed into a crate, loaded onto a truck where he rode to his fate. Cows are bummed. He was a scrawny calf who looked rather woozy. No one suspected he was packing an Uzi. Cows with guns. They came with a needle to stick in his thigh. He kicked for the groin. He pissed in their eye. Cow well hung. Knocked over a tractor and ran for the door. 6 gallons of gas flowed out on the floor. Run, cows, run. He picked up a bullhorn and jumped up on the hay. We are free-roving bovines. We run free today. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. They crashed the gate in a great stampede, tipped over milk truck, torched all the feed. Cows have fun. 60 police cars were piled in a heap, covered in cow pies, covered up deep. Much cow dung. Black smoke rising, darkening in the day. 12 burning McDonald's, have it your way. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. The president said, enough is enough. These uppity cattle, it's time to get tough. Cow dung flung. The newspapers gloated, folks sighed with relief. Tomorrow at noon, they would all be ground beef. Cows on buns. The cows were surrounded, they waited and prayed. They mooed their last moos, they chewed their last hay. Cows outgunned. The order was given to turn cows to whoppers, enforced by the might of 10,000 coppers. But on the horizon, surrounding the shoppers, came the deafening roar of chickens in choppers. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. With guns.
In early May 1998, I left home for 3 weeks. While I was away, I met a friend of mine, whom I have always loved for, among other things, her ability to combine deep affection with a frankness bordering on savagery. "I've been thinking about you," she said, "about the God of small things, what's in it, what's over it, under it, around it, above it." She fell silent for a while. I was uneasy and not at all sure that I wanted to hear the rest of what she had to say. She, however, was sure that she was going to say it. "In this last year, less than a year actually, you've had too much of everything. Fame, money, prizes, adulation, criticism, condemnation, ridicule, love, hate, anger, envy, generosity, everything. In some ways, it's a perfect story, perfectly Baroque in its excess. The trouble is that it has or can have only one perfect ending." Her eyes were on me, bright with a slanting, probing brilliance. She knew that I knew what she was going to say. She was insane. She was going to say that nothing that happened to me in the future could ever match the buzz of this, that the whole of the rest of my life was going to be vaguely dissatisfying, and therefore the only perfect ending to the story would be death. My death. "You've lived too long in New York," I told her. "There are other worlds, other kinds of dreams. Dreams in which failure is feasible, honorable, sometimes even worth striving for. Worlds in which recognition is not the only barometer of brilliance or human worth. There are plenty of warriors that I know and love, people far more valuable than myself, who go to war each day, knowing in advance that they will fail. True, they're less successful in the most vulgar sense of the word, but by no means less fulfilled. The only dream worth having," I told her, "is to dream that you will live while you're alive and die only when you're dead." "Which means exactly what?" she said, looking a little annoyed. I tried to explain, but didn't do a very good job of it, because sometimes I need to write to think. So I wrote it down for her on a paper napkin. And this is what I wrote: "To love, to be loved, to never forget your own insignificance, to never get used to the unspeakable violence and the vulgar disparity of life around you, to seek joy in the saddest places, to pursue beauty to its lair, to never simplify what is complicated or complicate what is simple, to respect strength, never power, above all, to watch, to try and understand, to never look away, and never, never to forget." Thank you.
Now you are at the world's largest airfield on Tinian in the Marianas. The voice you hear is that of Chaplain William Downey, who stood amongst the target charts, the escape kits, and the stale coffee, and said a prayer for the Enola Gay and civilization.
"We pray, thee, that the end of the war may come soon, and that once more we may know peace on earth. May the men who fly this night be kept safe in thy care, and may they be returned safely to us. We shall go forward, trusting in thee, knowing that we are in thy care now and forever. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen."
人類は二度とこのような復興を繰り返してはならない、この教訓を人類の未来に生かすべきだという思いでありました。
The citizens of Hiroshima were suffering physically and mentally. Sometimes they were on the verge of losing the will to live. But what supported them was the belief that this foolish tragedy should not be repeated and that humankind should learn a lesson from their experience.
Now tell me right out loud, what are you supposed to do when you see the flash?
Duck and cover. Duck and cover.
This is the Berkeley Signal.
To create is divine. To reproduce is human. Man Ray.